Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office. To get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand. All right.
Moment of silence, guys.
Moment of silence. Sheesh. Hate to meet you all like this.
Hi. Well, safe to say that we're both a little bit bamboozled because we thought we'd be releasing this pod with a little bit of celebrations. Maybe we'd be taking a shot, you know?
You know what? In retrospect, like knowing how it actually ended, I don't take shots. Like I would have taken a shot on this podcast if she would have won, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly,
I would have.
You probably would have even gone for tequila, which you hate, you know?
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Right. So missed opportunities for certain things. However, we obviously are back. I can't say better than ever because we've got shit.
No, we're like actually worse than ever. Yeah. Definitely on the corner of devastated, broken, and defeated, but we will come out of that. I think we are still in the fresh, raw moment of this heartbreaking loss. I don't care about the work I put in. I don't care about losing. I'm a competitive person. I'm a former athlete. That's the last thing I give a shit about. I, you know, went into Wednesday of last week just like genuinely shattered and worried and scared about like what's to come. I'm just like trying to process emotions and like get into a clear-minded space because there is a big fight ahead and like we have to be ready to go. And I think each day has gotten easier for me, but, you know, it still hurts. How about you?
I honestly think I've processed it really quickly because, and we talk about this a little bit on our conversation with V and Sammy, which we'll tell you guys about our guests, obviously, you know, in a few moments. But I think the devastation, like the feel of almost like betrayal of humanity that you felt and emotionally felt like that heartbreak of, I had that last year. Like I already processed feeling like people would do horrible things and or do things that, how do I even phrase this, that just make you question people's humanity. And so to me, I feel like, well, I'm devastated by this. We have so much shit to do. Like, let's fucking go kind of element. I processed it a lot faster. Like it was almost like I was like, okay, this sucks. This is fucked up. This is bad for all of these reasons. And now we got to keep going. Because I don't think I ever got off of, what is that line of thought? When you're operating from like the adrenaline.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're always like sort of on, like you're always sort of ready for a fight. Like I don't think I ever, that stopped for me in like the last year, even with the joy and like some of that. So I think I processed it a lot faster. So in an element of that, I'm a little bit more ready to go and think about like, how are we going about handling the next 2 years into midterms? How are we handling also next year with Virginia and New Jersey? How are we handling the next 4 years? And in my head, like I'm already in the point of like, how do we strategize to the best of our ability to put ourselves in the best possible positions to not only win again, but to make sure people are okay and to protect people and all of these things. So I think just being in like a little bit of a different spot.
Yeah, for sure. I was so down bad like Wednesday, Thursday. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. And Friday like already was much better. Saturday was much better. Like also just being able to step away, like get offline. Because I think the other thing, which we talk about in our interview in this episode, but like we can also talk about here is just like generally people jumping on this bus of like winning the why and trying to like be the one with the hottest take, and the blame game is in full force. And we just want to say like, nobody knows anything yet. And I think it's like important to also like, if you are hurting or, you know, still processing everything, like take that time to process, because we don't even know what the fuck happened yet. And we won't until we get data back. And so just like take the time you need to like emotionally get right so that you're clear-minded when we like get data and we can come up with plans and like move forward. Because yeah, there's a lot of rhetoric out there right now of people saying it was this, it was that, it was this, it was that. And some of those things could definitely and probably will be correct, but also like exit polls aren't correct all the time. That's the only thing we're basing a lot of this off of. And so just remember that and know that like more is to come, more clarity is to come. So it's probably best to just be offline right now and just take care of yourself, because it's too much. And also people are like coming in with hot takes that aren't even logical or based in fact at this point. So
yeah. And I think what I'm seeing, and I'm curious if you're seeing this a little bit too, is the takes are reflective of sort of what social media has become, or maybe always has been, is it lacks nuance.
Always.
And I think, like, I was trying to put this into words before, but I think Kentucky is, like, to me, like, the best example of this, of what we know thus far, okay? In the state of Kentucky, we flipped the state Supreme Court, okay? It now has a Dem majority. We voters there also, by 65%, again, with data as it is today, said absolutely not to a school voucher program, which would have constitutionally allowed taxpayer money to be used for sending kids to private and charter schools. At the same time as that, they reelected a Republican supermajority to the state legislature and overwhelmingly elected President Trump to the presidency. What I can like literally say,
and also as a Democratic governor and right. A Mitch McConnell senator. It's, yeah.
So what it shows to me is that people in and of themselves are nuanced. Mm-hmm. And it shows that you have to look at some of these races like bit by bit. You look at the state ledge there. Well, you know what? There's not a lot of inroads or infrastructure there for Dems to run for the state legislature. They have a huge time recruiting candidates there. So mm-hmm. to say, oh, across the board, of course, Dems lost this whole state legislature. Well, who is running? Was there any support for who was running? Right. There's like all of those questions. At the same time, when you like think about the education piece, you have to think, okay, but like, were those voters aware of Trump wanting to defund public education? You have to think that some of those people didn't make that connection or weren't aware of that information, because they clearly voted for public education being protected. So that's just like, and maybe not all of those takeaways are exactly accurate, but the point is there's not just one finite, well, it was inflation, well, it was blah, 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 like whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's multitudes of things. It's a confluence of things. And each of these races needs to be looked at individually, because I don't think you're going to get one blanket reason for each thing.
No, I just definitely don't. Not. And AOC has been posting some really interesting stories. I was like, last night she posted like all of these. She basically put one of those like question boxes and was like, by the way, like if anyone did vote for Trump and me in my district, like please let me know. And all these people responded that they did do that and the why. And like the Bernie and the AOC versus the Trump people like liking both of them, it's like wild. And that's been like a big takeaway of like, for me. But Trump just duped everyone onto this like populism approach. Kamala had like very populist economic policies in her platform, and Trump just duped them. And it's probably because of a lot of different things, which again, we just don't know yet, of like the media ecosystem, how he talks to people, how we talk to people. Like, but at the end of the day, the things people want are progressive policies and solutions. And they just didn't see that reflected in this campaign and in some campaigns down the ballot as well. So it's just crazy. I think that's such a high level abstract take, but that's all we can do at this point. That's all we really know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes to show too that like labels don't really help anyone, if anything, right? Looked at those stories as well. And one of the big responses was, I like that you guys say it as it is and that you're not a part of like this establishment vibe, whatever. So what they're saying all in all is, regardless of like what it is, like they don't like a label. They don't like a Republican. They don't like a Democrat. They don't like progressive. Like they don't like anything that like you put a label on. then all of a sudden it's tainted and it becomes a part of a larger whole of something that they feel is against them.
Yeah.
So
and like they've known that, and that's what's frustrating too, is like, you know, I've been in focus groups earlier this year. I know they've been doing focus group after focus group, polls after polls, and generally like the consensus across everyone, no matter what party they're affiliated with, is like, they are sick of politics. They don't like it. They don't like how it functions. They don't like the idea of the establishment. They think it's corrupt. And it's like, okay, you have to build that trust. Like, that's where people are at. And I think that's generally like what we are seeing reflected in these results, is this guy who was ousted by the establishment and who initially ran on an anti-establishment platform, he's back, and I'm anti-establishment too, and here I am voting for him.
I also think, and perhaps this is an abstract thought as well, the identity piece played so wrong. I think that we in this country look at identity, which will connect to sort of what you're saying, as through the markers in which society gives to somebody else. So somebody's religion, somebody's race, somebody's ethnicity, somebody's gender identity, like what society looks like. But we don't look at like what the identity somebody wants to have for themselves. And so when we look at like someone that voted for Trump, and this is not everyone, this is just a certain amount of people, what they see is like not what we see, which I'd see a bunch of tool bags, to be honest, but what they see is a guy that is, in their eyes, facts aside, self-made, makes a lot of money, wealthy, says what he wants and gets away with it, does what he wants, gets away with it. People feel like he's under attack, but he still stands up. He still gets back up every day. And that's what they feel like they want for themselves. They want the privilege of being in that position, of being wealthy, able to do what the fuck that they want and say, you can't do anything for me. And I'm going to keep coming up a positive when you keep trying to hit me down. That's the identity that so many people want to see across the board for themselves. And that's visualized in how those people operate. Again, whether for good, bad, indifferent. But I think, again, it's the identity people want for themselves, not the identity that they have. Like, that's like,
totally.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not actually getting to know the person and like what they see. You're getting to know and what you see on them. That's not right.
Well, 1,000%. That's so true. And I think like, and how you perceive someone like Trump, and whether he is a self-made, rich, does what he wants, says what he wants, macho dude, people who see him that way, were he was painted to them in that way via the ways that they consume media. And I think there's been a big emphasis on media consumption and this like media ecosystem that we're living in. And what I was seeing and what I have seen is not that. He is not that. He's bankrupt companies. He's a fraud. He's got tiny little hands. He wears makeup. He's literally can't put a sentence together. He doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, people who consume a different type of media than me can see a completely different. They can see like a big, hot UFC fucking macho masculine man that they want to be. And it's like, that's been obviously a huge fracture in how people are moving and how people ended up voting in this election. And I just, it's hard. And I think honestly, some of that has given me some solace of like, you know, when you consume media, it alters how you think about something and someone. And I'm holding hope that just people saw something different than me. And because one of the initial like shocks and like feelings that hurt so bad was like literal rapist who has 20 counts of rape against him, a convicted felon, bankruptcies, fraud, like all of the things, people chose that over a very qualified, very compassionate candidate who is a Black woman. And that was the initial hurt for me of like, that's what people want. People will choose that over a woman. And that's was really hard, a hard pill to swallow, and still is. And there's definitely still a cohort of people who did vote that way because they can't vote for a woman. And we like definitely should not look past that, because that is very, very real. It was the same in 2016. It's the same now. It's so nuanced. Everyone has came at it from such a different angle. And a lot of Trump supporters would be like, no, I'm a big supporter of women. In fact, Trump's protecting women. Like, that's what they think. That's what they saw through whatever they consumed.
which is bananas to us. But like it, I think also like you think about even in places where we win, we have to think about how many people still voted for the opposition. I was looking at North Carolina's numbers last night, and one of the things that I did see was despite like Josh Stein winning the governor's race, over 2 million people voted for Mark Robinson, a guy that literally said, I'm a black Nazi and a gazillion other things, was peeping on girls in the locker rooms, crazy shit. And well, again, so happy that at the end of the day, he lost. There's something about those 2 million people that still voted for him. And we have to think about, we can't discard that in thinking about gender and race and everything else in between, because clearly
it can't be just a swipe breaker.
2 million people that said, well, I'm a Republican and he's a Republican, because we saw plenty of people break with their party in both ways in this particular overall race. But those takeaways, still important, still an important spot to look.
We're separating this into some buckets. And I feel like the first one we talked about was like looking at the Democratic Party, like looking internally, like trying to, as best we can in this moment without the data, figure out what we did wrong. I think there's a laundry list of things. Number two, a bucket of just like media consumption. Like some people just got a completely different view of these two candidates than other people. And that's one bucket or another bucket. Third bucket, I feel like, is also just generally people being uninformed and unengaged, which obviously continues to be a theme like across the board for years and years and years, which is one of the reasons we started this whole podcast. People are very uninformed, I think, as well. Maybe you saw one mailer or they saw one thing that said, oh, Republican for lowering taxes, check, has my vote, you know, and people aren't doing their due diligence of like looking deeper. So there's, I think, that third bucket that I find very real as well. And like, we have to meet people where they're at.
To connect to that bucket, I think we obviously, again, hence why we're here, the civic education piece that's missing is so huge, and it's paramount to this whole thing. I mean, I can't, the amount of people that I've, and this is not a shame game, this is like, people just don't know.
Yeah.
The amount of people that I've had to talk about the ballot measures, the abortion ballot measures with, and explain to them that if a national abortion ban at any level is passed, that will trump, literally, pun intended, that will trump the state laws. Federal law trumps state law. It doesn't matter if it's in the state's constitution. Like, that is how that plays out. So if you're in Missouri and you voted for protecting reproductive rights, great, happy about it, awesome, because obviously we're aligned in vision there. But that doesn't protect you if there's a federal abortion ban.
Mm-hmm.
So if you voted for Trump and you voted for that, there's clearly a huge disconnect. Some of that civic education, some of that is people literally thinking that Biden overturned Roe v. Wade because it happened during his presidency. I mean, like, the list goes on as to why people think that or are disconnected from that. And I don't want to shame anyone in that, because there's such a deep civic education problem in this country. And because we have
one side who like truly lies to people and just makes shit up as they go. Sure. And it's like, they're uninformed because they were told lies. Like, as simple as that, you know, it sucks. And I think the economy is another issue that is like the pure example of that, of like how after decades, like this has been a Democratic problem for literal decades of like being bad for the economy. When the reality is every single Democratic administration has created an economy for the past like 20, 30 years, has created an economy that was better off when that president left than when they started. And they often inherited some type of economic mess. They made it better. It's booming. And then because of the way the pendulum swings politically, a Republican will likely get back in and fuck it up. And then you don't feel economic feelings, good or bad, until years after an administration when policies change. For example, we're still living under a Trump tax plan right now. And that seems like, I didn't do a great job of explaining that concisely, but there is a way to do that. And like, we have failed at doing that over and over and over again. Obama tried this cycle. I think a lot of his campaigning, he was talking about that. Like, he inherited my economy. Like, Obama was saying that in these rallies. He's like trying to tell people. And it's like,
But here's the thing. No Fox News watching person is listening to Obama on a mic.
Exactly.
Like, so that's great for somebody that's already tuned in. It's already checked their box in. But like that message isn't breaking through that box at all. And mm-hmm. that I where I go to the deeper levels of issues with this whole situation is the fact that like this was a 3-month campaign. I don't know if it would have changed the game if we were in it longer. I think that like there could still have been so many issues. Let's not be real. But like that messaging, that turnaround time on that, clearly there was not enough time. But there also weren't economic messengers that felt right for everyday people. When Democrats message on the economy, they always say the unemployment rate and they always say the stock market and like those numbers. And GDP. Those are important, right? But the average everyday person, they don't. And that's not their everyday. If they can't put food on the table or pay their rent, that's their economy and their economy is bad. So like we're dealing in old metrics and old messaging. And I was saying this,
but I think the Harris campaign did a good job at pivoting on that because like her platform was addressing people's actual economic concerns, which is price gouging, housing prices, et cetera. And I think there's another like misogynistic layer that comes in here because clearly we had two candidates who were not treated the same. We had one candidate, Trump, who truly like lawless, did not have a platform, just still does not have a platform or policy plan at this point, aside from Project 2025, which he distanced himself from, versus Kamala was out there like over and over spewing what she had planned for her economic policies, including 30 million new homes, $25,000 in first-time home buyer assistance, like literal things that you can easily say and point to, but the rules just were not the same for the two of them. Yeah. You know, like she still got criticized for not having a plan when she was the only one that had a plan. And she was saying it over and over and over again. And they were populist messages. She was coming after corporations for price gouging. Like, and that is definitely another misogynistic layer that lies here. And yeah, there's definitely probably a messaging problem there as well. That maybe we didn't do enough that we needed to reach people with those messages, but they were there. And that's the other thing. Like people didn't do their research, I guess, like not informed. Yeah. That's what I mean when I say not informed. Like you don't actually go to her website, see the list of policies, and then come talk to me about her non-platform bullshit.
Right.
I got like it's literally so annoying.
Right there. That I remember after the Call Her Daddy interview, I was like livid because it was exactly that. I was like, I don't know her. Well, here are all these opportunities. Here are all these podcasts she's going on to. Yes, she could have gone on more and I wish she did for sure. But like there were opportunities outside of her own website that you could take upon yourself mm-hmm. to actually like learn about her candidacy and what was her plan for the future. And people didn't do that or they didn't mm-hmm. care or a range of different things. But I do think even when we think about mainstream media, which we could argue is mainstream or not mainstream or whatever, but without going down that rabbit hole, I do think that the coverage was constantly on Trump and always her second. And one of the things I've worried about, despite being a participant in it, and I plead guilty on that, is that some of the insane shit that he says, we've turned into like TikTok trends and things of that nature, which while the same, you know, it shows, this guy said this insane, you know, thing like eating the dogs, eating the cats, whatever that line is.
It's normalizing
We made this.
That was
like,
a big thing
is...
we were messaging too. Like, don't repeat the lie. You have to call it out for its bullshit. When we make these funny trends, like that's what it does. It like repeats the lie and normalizes it. And yeah, there was definitely a lot of that ended up hurting us.
There's so many things. I do want to talk about a few positive bright spots though, because I feel like that's important.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Let's talk about the positive bright spots.
Okay, the positive bright spots is Andy Kim won his Senate seat.
Yeah.
Okay, Maddie's just looking at me like, I'm going to kill you. So if you're not watching on YouTube.
No, I'm game.
She's losing her shit over here.
We love Andy. Okay. We do
love Andy, and he is a gem of a human, and I'm very excited to see the humility and humanity that he brings to this Senate seat. I think it's duly needed. He is somebody that is very well known for being able to have conversations across the aisle, so I'm excited to see that and how that plays out. I'm also excited to see both Angela also Brooks and Lisa Blunt in Rochester, two Black women powerhouses that are going to be in the Senate. Liza Slotkin, Jewish queen, dare I say.
And the House is still up for grabs, but
I don't
not
think
looking
we're gonna
great.
Get it.
Yeah, I think we have, out of the like five remaining, I think we have one that we're that's actually leaning Dem, and the others are toss-ups, lean and lean Republican. So we do expect a Trump trifecta, and I think we don't know what that is going to look like. It's truly the worst case scenario, especially for people who were sounding the alarm on Project 2025. And if indeed he is associated, which I don't trust the man, I know he is, he has the power to do the things in Project 2025. And if you don't know what it is, and if after he distanced himself from it, you kind of were like, okay, that's not real, go look it up and go see what it's about. Because that is his plan. And maybe that's why he didn't publicly say much in terms of what he wanted to do policy-wise, because it's already laid out in Project 2025. And so when you just have concepts of a plan that you can say publicly, but you have the secret evil plan behind the scenes, maybe that's what the plan was. Again,
yeah,
I've been saying nonstop since this result came through of like, oh my God, I wish more than anything I'm wrong. Like, I truly, from my heart of hearts, want him to be the greatest president that America has ever seen. Like, truly, I want it to not be that bad. I want him to do well. But from what we know, it's going to be really bad, and it's going to hit vulnerable communities first and worst. But if Project 2025 does become our reality, like, it's coming to a liberal city near you as well. So don't think that it's not.
Yeah.
Like Sam said earlier, like, we have these ballot measures that pass, which is amazing. And it also just shows generally like where people stand on reproductive rights. But a national abortion ban trumps it all. And I've been talking to my dad about it too. And he's like, he doesn't think that that will happen, because he raises a good point too, of like a lot of this more extreme stuff that is in Project 2025 and just generally like that is more like Christian nationalist. He's not that. Like, Trump's never been that. And he doesn't give a fuck about abortion. And he's now in this power that he can do whatever he wants. And that includes not doing the things that these Christian national groups even want, you know? And he's known to burn every fucking bridge of everyone he's ever worked with. And any promises he might have made to people beforehand, he doesn't give a fuck. He'll break them all. Like, him and Elon are going to end up hating each other. Him mm-hmm. and RFK are going to end up hating each other. And so we just don't know like where he's going to land on a lot of this stuff. What he does care about is himself and making more money, and maybe a group of his other rich buddies like helping them make more money. And I can guarantee the economy will feel that. And I think that's going to be the biggest hardship of these next 4 years, is how fucked we are from an economic standpoint, of especially when looking at the things he wants to do. But on these social issues, it's interesting because he doesn't actually give a fuck. He was pandering to a base that he knows is misogynistic and racist, but he will definitely come through on his deportation promise, which is
For sure.
I think one of, if not the scariest part about what's to come, is this mass deportation promise that he's made.
For sure. I think it's horrifying. It's terrifying. I think he was an interesting point, and it was something that I was thinking about this morning. And also last night, just like, how long is this like buddy ship with RFK Jr. going to last? I was like, remember Scaramucci? He lasts 24 hours as press secretary, something crazy. Like, there are some interesting points to that, right? Like, narcissistic, egotistical men in a room. And at a certain point, when they've like hit a level, they're going to just eat each other.
Yeah.
And there will be a point where that happens. Next year, we got some races on the ballot. We got a lot. There's local stuff, so make sure in your neck of the woods, you're checking that out. But we have the Virginia governor's race and New Jersey governor's race and their state legislatures, which vital. We have a Republican governor in Virginia right now that we can oust. We have an increasingly red state in New Jersey that could elect a Republican. I don't know who's going to run yet. We got to protect that. We got to elect a Dem there as well. So there's stuff that we need to be acting on literally starting now to best protect ourselves. Because if anything, which I've seen in the last, all the past administrations, is having a strong Democratic governor is so fucking important.
Yeah.
These are two positions that now I think are starting to get their flowers a little bit more, but they are so vital.
But I also want to say too, for the House, in 2017, Trump had the House and they had a 47 seat majority in 2017. And now they're going to have like a 5 or 6 seat majority. So that's like something to also like maybe a deep breath about of like, there is a lot of caucusing that we can do to put in that work and try and block as much as we can. The other thing is that when Trump came in 2017, Democrats only had 5 state trifectas. Now we have 17. So that's also just like another just deep breath of like, we have pathways to fight back. Again, not gaslighting anyone that like it's going to be bad, but we do have strongholds in places that will be really crucial to push back and fight back and hopefully prevent what some are saying is an authoritarian stronghold of our country. Woo! Yeah. And the other thing too, just like as we look forward of like playing defense, also just like check in with your state and local representatives. I know that's like the least sexy thing to do, but check in with them. Make sure they like have plans in place for protecting you against Trump's America. Like in San Francisco, we have a new governor and he's like more moderate and
mayor.
And bet your ass, like I'm DMing them and I'm being like, or I'm emailing them, be like, let me know your plan to like protect us. If there's a national abortion ban, like talk to us. So do that too. Do that to your mayors and your locals, but also your state representatives and your House or your Assembly or and your Senate, whatever structure you have in your state. But we will have to make sure we are holding those people accountable and checking in on them and being communicative with them.
And to that point, we are putting together a mass Rolodex of all of the Dems that won the cycle, regardless of where they stand on the big spectrum of the Big Ten, progressive to conservative Dem to everything, whatever. And it's going to have all of their social handles. So that way you can stay engaged with what they're doing.
Yeah. And we get into this too more in this interview, but also just like, again, take care of yourself. Take this time. Sammy and I talk about it. Just like live it up. Do you find joy in your personal life? Find community in person community, because that's like those are the things that are going to be able to keep us going. So just remember that. And
you know what? If that comes in the form of buying our new merch collection, by all means, we're not going to complain about it.
Yeah. Retail therapy.
Yeah. And if you guys are an OG, you will remember the When in Doubt, Vote Them Out merch. Mm-hmm. We brought it back. Better quality merch, like comfort colors.
And more
cozy.
Pertinent than ever.
Yeah. And it's like a new design. It's super cute. So check it out. It will be, as per usual, linked in the show notes, in our newsletters, all the things.
Yeah. We're unfortunately going to be in a really painful I told you so period. But like, we also can't do that. We can't do the I told you so. We have to bring more people in. If people start waking up to like, oh, fuck, maybe I shouldn't have voted this way. That's okay. Let people be wrong as much as we want to be fucking toxic and as much as I want to be toxic and petty. Don't be. Try your best not to be, because again, it's going to take all of us in these years to come to like build our tent, welcome more people back. And we have to welcome people with open arms back and be like, don't worry. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone has those days. So with that, I think we can introduce our two guests today. We get more into just like this post-election debrief. Because a good election debrief with friends is very necessary right now. So,
for sure. And we brought on our friends from Betches and Under the Desk News. We've got V, we've got Sammy, and both combined are the American Fever Dream podcast. So, like, obviously, 4 podcasters, 1 virtual.
Get into it.
Like, we really get into it. And honestly, we could have been on Speak Pipes for an eternity. I genuinely, like,
yeah.
It's what happens.
So without further ado, here is Sammy, Maddie, Sammy, and V.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, guys, this is the debrief of the debrief. This is podcasters, four political podcasters in one room.
Yeah.
Well, sort of virtually talking about what we thought was going to be a celebration, if I may put a broad strokes expectation that we all had, and turned into a tragedy in every
way. Yeah, we booked this before election night, and we're so excited to just bring friends together in a room and talk about all the fun things that were to be, but we're in a different place right now.
I booked I booked so many things before election night thinking I would be on like Celebration Victory Tour.
Yeah.
And I am like, I did a speaking event we talk about on our podcast, American Fever Dream, this past weekend, and I was supposed to be teaching them resilience through grief. No, I spent like an hour playing press secretary, answering questions I couldn't ask and getting screamed at. People are, you know, they're in a raw state. And, you know, me trying to be like, we need to build resilience through grief was kind of akin to like when somebody dies and like your well-meaning aunt comes in and goes, they're in a better place. Get fucked. They're not in a better place. This isn't the better place. So I was like, all right, I got to stop doing that. We're still in, you know, the death of a dream in many ways.
Yeah, no doubt. Sammy, how are you? I was just like that. I was thinking about speaking of the death of a dream, I was thinking like, okay, so climate change, like there's so many years we're about to quote unquote lose on dire situations. And there's going to be so many people who are going to live in so much fear and experience so many horrors. And I just feel like we're on the cusp of this really, really trying time. And I can't even parse whether I'm trying to, my brain is like protecting itself or if like this is how it is. And, you know, you just have to kind of take it day by day and figure out how you're going to be okay and what you're going to do to try to protect yourself and other people. Mm-hmm. And I feel disappointed. I feel angry at many things. I feel a little bit stupid for thinking that, for not realizing the extent to which people were not seeing what I thought they should or could have been seeing. Mm-hmm. And just been feeling very reflective a lot. Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of feelings. It's so many feelings. And yeah, I mean, there's so much to unpack. I genuinely don't know where to start. I think there's like almost some like gaslighting I've been doing on myself of like, was I being dramatic? Like this whole year, especially like all of us working in this space of like messaging all of these issues and this candidate and everything to people, I'm like, is Project 2025 not real? Like, is everything going to be okay? Like, am I wrong? Because so many people voted for this guy and down the ballot. Like, what's going on? Am I wrong? That's been like my big, once I got all the tears out, like when I started reflecting, those are kind of the thoughts that I started to have of like, I mean, because I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm very wrong about all of the dangers that are to come.
Well, right.
I think part of this is the psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Like, were you wrong, or did the next day Black people receive mass texts that they were going to need to report to plantations? Like, we have not started the deportation camps yet, but were you wrong? Because that happened. I think so much of this is a psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not lived through an oppressive government. We should maybe ask some people who have, I think. It's like, that's kind of what I've been thinking about. It's like, well, what is normal and to what extent is questioning your reality part and parcel of what living in a society like this is about?
Can I tell you as a Buffalo Bills fan what it's like to believe so fucking hard every year and have your heart broken every year? It's that, right? It's And part of it, I know I will. I know when the midterms come, I'm just going to be just as optimistic and passionate and excited to tell people about the great policies that we have and the thoughts we have and the people we have on our team. And I know in 4 years, I'm going to be just excited to like get out there and fight whatever we're up against. because as a Buffalo Bills fan, I've been trained for this my entire life. Okay. Every year we go into it. We haven't won the Super Bowl since like 1992. Okay. So my entire life we go into it. We're like, this is our year. You know, Josh has got this guy now and that's going on. And we got better teams and the field is different and the air is crispier and the Farmer's Almanac says we convince ourselves of all these things, right? The lake effect is going to give us an edge over the Dolphins. We tell ourselves crazy things because that's part of building community and that's part of the fun of this fandom. And for me, when it happened, when we lost to the Chiefs this past year, I cried so hard. We made merch that had Buffalo broken hearts with Band-Aids on it. We're like, oh my gosh, we thought this was the end of the world, right? And where are we right now? We're 1 year from that. And we're like, Josh Allen's looking good. Josh Allen's looking good.
Looks real good.
You know what I mean? He's looking good. I like that Keon. We're making better choices. We'll see. We're going to go all the way, right? That's part of it. So I don't think anybody has to feel stupid or embarrassed for how passionate and how much love they put into this. Because like I said to Garrison Hayes, the night of the DNC, it was night four. We were exhausted. And I was like, even if she doesn't win, they'll never take this away from me. They'll never take the 5 months that I had with some of the best people I'll ever meet for the rest of my life, just trying so hard to include other people in the change and in the world that could be that we saw. We saw a world that could be in spite of the way that it is. And that is something that I will always want to provide people and I will always believe is possible because it is possible. And sometimes it does happen. And I think it can happen again. Something that is giving me hope is the collective despair that everybody has, right? It wasn't like oops, let's move on. We maintain that passion. We're going to find our community, but we have to do it through reflection, through rest, through being quiet, through listening. Because if we just get into reacting again, we're going to be in the same place we've always been in.
Yeah. And I have to say, like the last like handful of days, the reactivity has been insufferable, like to the point where I'm like, oh my God, can everyone, people I agree with, just shut the fuck up, genuinely. Yeah. Because we're not learning anything. And I also think in doing the reactivity, what you're doing is killing the hope. And what we learned in this particular cycle is that hope actually puts people places. It actually moves the needle. It brought more people into the fold. Obviously, it wasn't like enough. We still lost, but we did bring more people in by inspiring hope. So like to kill that piece of it by everyone going in circles and pointing fingers and like looking like Looney Tunes, it just makes us look crazy. It doesn't actually do anything. So personally, I've been
Honestly, like I have to say, so I agree that like the hope was critical. And I think that I am so much happier that I spent these months thinking that there was a chance and knowing that everyone gave it their all, like, because that happened, whether or not whatever the result was, what people did added to who they are and who we are.
Right.
And that is important. So all of that, great. I'm so much happier than if, and anyone who would have been like, anyone who wants to say Biden could have fucking won or done any better.
No shot.
No way.
You didn't raise $1 billion because he had a better chance. Okay. So just like, that's crazy. But when the idea of an open primary, okay, how is that going to happen? Like, please, the only thing that could have gone differently with the candidates where you didn't get her would have been if he dropped out in 2023 and said, I'm going to be a one-term president, which he did promise. So reserve it for him, but you can't go back to that. I actually think that people, maybe you're thinking about different people that I'm thinking about, that I think people have been so much less reactive than in 2016. In 2016, it was like, we're going to take it all to a level 100 and we're going to take it all to a level 100 every single day until he is done. And I think that that led to a lot of like shallow moves, like the pussy hats and the signs and all this shit. And like, I actually think
I liked it at the time, I want to stop you there, though. At the time, that was the best reaction. I'm not doing it again. They're trying to do another women's march. I'm not coming.
Fuck that.
Well, because it's so different.
Marching for shit.
It's different. I'm not marching. They're going to kill us. I'm not trying to go down there after January 6th, after the 2020 stuff, after all this. These people are lunatic nut jobs. I'm not going to say, hey, guess what? There's going to be a million women in D.C. come and get us.
Also, what is the point? You do not have political power.
Right.
And marching should look. What I'm happy that people are being reactive about where do we go wrong, what should we do, is because at least they're not doing that bullshit other than the blue bracelets, which just please do not even, I'm sorry, I'm very reactive and angry right now. But the lack, like the idea that symbolic gestures, it's like, they trained you coming out of the girl boss era that any of that shit mattered. What actually matters is power and speaking to people. And you can never post anything online for the rest of your life, but you could convert people through conversation.
Right.
Exactly.
And everybody needs to figure out how to speak to their people. Stop doing it online for views and learn about what's going on and take this shit seriously. I actually think that some of the blame that's going around is very warranted. Mm-hmm. And I happen to know that if the Democratic establishment and the campaign had actually listened to any of those people who are now saying we should have done this, we should have done this, we should have done this, maybe this would not have been the outcome. Mm-hmm. Because this message-tested consultant class is ruining everything for the rest of us and validating what the Republicans are saying, which is that we are this cosmopolitan party with college degrees and no real sense of the world. And we are out here defending fringe ideologies, which we're actually not. And we put up a DEI woman because that is a reflection of all of our culture. When in fact,
the white replacement, it just fed into all their bullshit,
it
right?
Fed into their bullshit. And I think that on our quote unquote side, what we need to stop doing is stop excluding people, and we need to start converting people. Mm-hmm. And this idea of policing ourselves of, oh, you're a white woman, so you don't get to count, or men are trash, so don't come over here. Of course they're going to go to the party that tells them they're gods and flawless. Like, we need to learn how to actually engage and not just, like, you know, speak to people with respect, as here I am yelling at everyone. like, be willing to go on Fox News. Be willing to go on Rogan and actually speak their language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pete is it. Like, Pete is the example of what we need. I'm also just like, I'm ready for our, like, silent majority era. Like, I think it's time. Maybe we need to just, like, get fucking quiet for a second and, like, figure our shit out, because the way we scream from the rooftops, it really pushes a lot of people away in so many ways. It's
I think, too, like, the best example of this, obviously, Jewish girly pop speaking to this, is, like, October 7th and the reaction to that. And, like, me, like, my reaction to this was so much more muted, because I went, I already lost faith in humanity. Like, I already saw, like, how people can react and not listen and learn and do actually emulate the values that they're preaching and screaming, because they're not doing them. And you, like, wonder why people move to a party that was just like, hey, like, open arms, come here. So
you can be the worst version of yourself and be in power.
Exactly. And they did excuse anti-Semitism. As a fellow Jewish girly, this party did excuse anti-Semitism from certain people. They do it too. But that is, it doesn't make it okay to do it over here and to actually, like, turn Israel into this fulcrum issue that it should not be, because Israel is a ally of the West historically. And I think the failure to articulate this and to have people who could push back without losing all their incentives, it is a culture. Like, they're incentivized to say the craziest thing because they're going to get money and views and shock jock and, you know, shock jock popularity, and the algorithms are going to feed them. Here, it's like, who are we going to attack today from our own side who shares predominantly the same values as we do? And my feeling was always like, I'm going to just ignore. I always felt like I betches generally, like, we're going to sidestep that bullshit. Like, people don't want to hear about that. I tend to, like, shy away from reactionary ideologies fundamentally. Like, I don't, they make me uncomfortable, like, no matter which side it's on. But I think that, like, you having this energy really just made your message fall on deaf ears. And that's why no one felt like they could get to know her, because she kept saying the same thing. And it felt like she was always trying to do that to avoid losing support, which may be true.
There was also a little bit of, like, being too polite, right? There was this idea that we all had to praise Biden so much for finally stepping aside. Her first day of the entire DNC was dedicated to, like, thanking Biden. She was still super tied to Biden. No matter how much I tried to say, she'll get you an arms embargo. She will. She will not be the one. She never said, let's make Gaza a parking lot. She has been more on the side of humanitarianism. She's been a softer figure when it comes to, like, all the hurt that is happening around the world, where Biden was a little more like, well, what's the paperwork say? She was like, what's the paperwork say? And let's try to do as much harm reduction as we can within the reason of what the paperwork says. We've got treaties and agreements with people. We can't just like throw them out the window because somebody doesn't like it today. But nobody was willing to wait for that. She got tied to Biden a whole bunch. And then there was this disinformation campaign that both linked into the pro-Palestinian movement, but also the Abandoned Harris movement, that was rooted in Russian and Iranian disinformation that was made to make anybody who was a trusted figure online discredited, the same way that they work to discredit the mainstream media. So you had someone like me, or like, I'm just going to say me, right? And there was an entire campaign to be like, you're a Fed, you're an op, you're paid by the DNC, you're a Zionist. I had to Google what Zionist was. Sammy laughed at me. I was like, I didn't know what it was. How the fuck do I know? I can't know everything. But I was like,
well, that's
then I look
scary
it up.
Because
I look it up and I'm like, Sammy, it just kind of says like, you know, you guys want to do your own thing, right? Like, I guess so. I mean, I didn't know what it was, right? So I'm fighting all of this hate, and it was so online. And then I was super paranoid in real life. And I think that's the first time I realized that what was happening on TikTok actually does not translate to real life.
Yeah.
Because on TikTok, oh my gosh, you guys watched that. And it was like, no matter what I said, then it was like, well, you're a white woman, you're going to use white woman tears to try and get out of this. And I was like, I'm not even in it. You guys are saying the conspiracy theories about me and under the desk were so wild that anytime I tried to ever say anything about it, well, then I was like, it just spun it up more. And then when I would be in real life and I'd be like, yeah, you probably just think I'm like a Fed and an op and a terrible person, they're like, what are you talking about? That was the first time that I realized that what happens on TikTok does not translate to real life. And I think that may have been a flaw in the Harris campaign, was like the popularity on TikTok and doing all the trends, but it didn't translate to voters. Now, the other thing I think that this is why I've been quiet also, and I think we're all feeling this sort of reflection thing. We told you not to touch the stove. We told you it was hot. We told you that we lived in this kitchen before and the stove was hot then. Some people who were burned by the stove the first time when Trump was in the kitchen wanted to be burned by it again. We told you how it was manufactured, how the stove works, and they wanted to touch it. They thought touching the stove would somehow be the most martyrous thing to do, the most righteous moral high ground thing to do. So touch the fucking stove then. I'm not eating anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not cooking in this kitchen. This kitchen's dirty. I'm going to go eat in my room. I'm not doing this, right? I'm eating only packaged goods. I'm not cooking in
Lunchables.
This kitchen. I'm Lunchables forever, right? So in some ways, some of the people who want to say things like the third party vote did not affect her ability to be elected, because they look at their one vote and they say, my one vote was one of 600,000 and it wouldn't have been enough to make up the gulf of how many people didn't show up to vote, are not taking responsibility for the fact that for an entire fucking year, all you did was say, if you voted for, aligned with the Democrats, did anything, you were voting for the devil. You were a horrible person. You weren't picking the lesser of two evils. You weren't working within your material conditions, which is the new word of the internet. The idea that people need to like work within their material conditions, i.e. saying, I would say, I'm a single issue voter and I'm voting to protect gay marriage. And they'd be like, well, that's because you love genocide. And I'm like, no, it's because I really care about my gay marriage. And when I'm looking at things I can control, that's the thing I can control. And now a lot of the third party voters are like, well, based on my material conditions, you can understand why I couldn't vote. And I'm like, first of all, shut up.
Wait, what do you mean their material conditions?
They're saying
like, I'm rich enough that I don't have to care about, I'm rich enough, I'm protected by every other risk enough that I don't actually have to care about any of those things. And I can vote on quote unquote genocide.
Right.
That I decided was genocide.
They decided that other people's labor was going to save them from having to do theirs. And to this point, I said this during the thing. I was like, Jill Stein was never going to lead a successful revolution. She's never even won election. Not all revolutions are successful. Where is she now? And
the tweet of her like going back into the sewer.
I know,
like,
but the people who should be the people who should be mad at her for being tricked. I don't blame you if you get fooled. I was fooled by a lot. I voted for fucking Republicans until I was 24 years old. You get dumb. Like, you do dumb things when you're young. You follow the wrong people, right? The fact that they followed her, believed her, whatever the case may be, is fine. But reflect on that and own that. And don't try to excuse yourself by saying, well, my one vote wouldn't have mattered because it wasn't enough to make up the gulf, when you participated in an online year-long harassment campaign against anybody who was trying to say anything that was like, well, you know what I mean? Third party votes historically have only hurt the Democrats or whatever. Now they're trying to say like, well, if she would have listened to us, she would have won. Or would she have lost 88% of Jewish women? You can't make up like things that aren't true.
Yeah.
I would argue that
the campaign online was more harmful than even if none of those people voted at all.
Because there was a lot of apathy, right? The campaign online was, one, rife with Russian and Iranian disinformation, not just the people. There's many movements within it, too, right? There's the authentic pro-Palestinian movement. That's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the online kind of like Madeleine Pendleton of it all, white leftist, moral superiority, talking up both sides of their ass stuff, right? Those people who spent the year-long crusade where no matter what anybody did, it wasn't enough, or if anybody rose up even in that organization, they were suddenly shot down. Like, I think of Aaron Hadamer, who worked really hard with Operation Olive Branch to try and get mutual aid to Palestinian families who were struggling to be able to escape. Well, she did a news interview, and all of a sudden everybody turned on her because she was a white woman, taking the attention away from the actual people and centering herself. And it was like, what?
Look, let them keep doing it until there's just one perfect person with all the right ideological views and no one to praise them because there's no one left on the side.
Yeah.
They just hate themselves. And I think, like, that is an unfortunate trait of just, like, the left in general, is, like, that's what we do. And that in and of itself, like, opening up the tent, bringing more people in is so necessary. And those conversations. And I think the point earlier of those, like, conversations offline, like, I can say, like, very specifically from, like, starting Girl on the Gov, because some of my friends weren't registered to vote. Mm-hmm. All my college best friends, they all are registered to vote. They all turned out to vote. They all voted for Kamala and Democrats up and down the ballot. As a result of conversations had over a series of years offline.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, that cannot
needle mover.
Right.
Right. This is the other thing. It's like Democrats led by consultants. And this isn't just about Kamala Harris or presidential race. I'm talking about elected officials throughout the Democratic Party. There's not this sense of, like, I'm going to work for my district and not worry about this other stuff. I'm not going to worry about whether there's trans kids in sports. That isn't,
it's,
if my
not
constituents
even happening,
come to me and tell me that's an issue, we talk about it. But I'm not weighing in on another district and all this bullshit, because, again, where I go back to, like, the reactive ideology is, like, and why I've never, like, tried to fall on either side of those things is because all you do is add to it. You just make it worse. And then you just lose credibility to the other side because no one's actually looking at these things, like, in any way closely. So just jumping into that conversation is so, into any of those conversations is so deeply pointless and actually just makes it worse and feeds that culture. When behind it, you just have all these normal people who just want their roads to be paved and their groceries to be affordable and to feel like they're not going to die if they have a miscarriage. Like, and I think that's what was so effective about college-educated white women. Like, your friends, it's like just speaking to the people in your life, like, stop performing online and have actual dialogue. Like, look people in the eye for once.
But I
not
did
your
look,
camera.
I mean, the thing that shocked me so much about the loss was the fact that I could not name one person in my extended life that wasn't sure that she was going to win, which includes my dad and his golfing buddies in Florida who wanted to vote for Kamala. They voted for Republicans down ballot in many ways, like for mayor and whatnot. But they didn't vote for Rick Scott because they didn't like what he did with the Hurricanes and they didn't think he was effective. And they didn't vote for Trump because they were sick of it. They were like, I'm so sick of hearing about him. I'm so sick of this bullshit. My girl dad, I don't, my kids are pissed. Like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going for him again. So to have them, the villages in Florida, go for her, all these different people, that it wasn't just my echo chamber. There wasn't one person in my life or extended life, up there and including Meghan McCain, who was like, nah, I think she's got it.
Elitist.
Yeah. No, that's been the hardest part is the shock factor.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're grieving, but you're also grieving like a sudden loss, like a sudden death. A sudden tragedy that's like adds to the pain even more so. And it makes it just harder to wrap your head around. And I think we just generally need to take the time to do that, to like feel it all, to take the time to like debrief it all, wrap our heads around it, because that does take time and it is something that's painful and real. So just giving yourself grace and everyone grace to like, this is our time to just process. Mm-hmm. And then we need to come up with our plan that's different and brings more people in, doesn't push people out,
And that is maybe the thing with the third party voters, right? Like, I'm very mad about a lot of it, but it wasn't just their fault. They're just one part of the whole pot. It's partly my fault. It's partly a lot of people's fault if we want to place blame. So when we're looking at the Jill Stein voter, let's say in particular, there was something about that campaign that made them believe so much that they did it, whether that was misguided or not, or they're learning a hard lesson on this side or not. How do we make sure next time it comes up, they don't vote for her? My brother-in-law voted for her in 2016, and he did not vote for her this time because he also learned, oh man, that lady tricked me. She was really promising me and making me feel like I was going to be a part of something that was going to be new, but now I know better, right? It's like, fool me once, okay. But how do we not ostracize those people who believed in her message? And what can we take into the party to say, okay, you know what? Some of these things really resonated. She wasn't the right person to lead it. She'll never be, and she'll be back in 2028. How do we do harm reduction against people falling for that again?
Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, I feel like this conversation, we've really taken the time to talk internally about us, just like the progressive left, the Democrats.
Yeah.
But there's also obviously a lot of people who voted for Trump and like who maybe don't align with him and like actually have progressive values and were duped into thinking he's the one that's going to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole nother conversation. And I think a big bulk of these election results is people, if you like break down policies and in issues, people who voted for Trump are like very progressive, and probably if there was a mask on which candidate was doing what, they would go Kamala every time if they actually knew what she was promising. So that's a whole nother, a whole nother thing.
There was the data where it's like the biggest predictor, I think, of which party you vote for was if you could answer those questions about the economy correctly, about economy and crime, and to ignore the disinformation and the media ecosystem that we're functioning in, considering that I think his campaign's biggest strength was how freely they would speak. So it all just gets washed out on, and people connected to them. Like, that's why people listen to podcasts, because they want to feel like it's real. And
well, they're lonely. But a lot of it might, look, our podcast is to inform. This is what you guys do too, right? It's to inform, but it's also to keep people company. The show I had before was entirely to keep people company. I built that show to be something that you listen to while you're walking around Home Goods by yourself, while you're waiting in line to pick up your kids from the bus and whatnot. The purpose was to just keep you company. And that is the thing that they have done well on the right, is to capture the attention and the company of young men in particular who don't feel like they have any place to go to. One, they've been told their entire life, all men are trash, right? Then they've been told like, whether they're not developed, so they're looking at things and saying, hey, there's no program that makes sure that I'm going to be okay and I don't feel like I have privilege. We're telling blue-collar, the sons of blue-collar workers in Appalachia that they have privilege, and they're looking at a dirt floor and going, what do you mean I have privilege? Like, what are you talking about? I watch myself and my family struggle all the time. And then they get these podcasts that make them, Joe Rogan going on for 3 hours, that's company, but it's background noise and it stays with them and it makes them feel included. And that's why they didn't have anywhere to go to celebrate when they won, because they don't actually have community. They have these rugged individual silos that they live in, and they are all based around their collective hate for something, their collective dissatisfaction with something. That's a lot easier to motivate people around, but it keeps them lonely. That makes it easier for us to say, you know what? We fucked up. And we didn't include you, and we're not hearing you. And we are telling people who live with dirt floors that they have privilege simply because of the color of their skin. And while there is some privilege to being able to exist in this world in white skin, it's not the level of privilege that we are putting on them, where they're hearing, I didn't get to go to college. I don't have any fucking
money.
I got a job at 12 years old. My uncle's in prison for doing stupid shit or selling drugs or whatever the case may be. And they felt more aligned. We all laughed when we said that Trump got arrested and he said, people are going to feel more like me. They're going to feel like I'm one of them. They did.
Yeah. So true.
And the thing is with like the take aside, you know, the parasocial relationships that influencers and podcasters now enable, being able to go on a podcast and flesh out your idea beyond a slogan is something that the Democrats really did not do.
Yeah. Like we've never known how to do that.
Well, the thing is,
you should have sent me out there as a surrogate.
Do you not know how to do it?
I'll talk to you for days.
Question: do you not know how to do it, or do you not you, to, or do they refuse to do it because they're nervous about little things and not being able to stand behind their idea? Like Bernie Sanders can do that. Mm. AOC can do that. there are messengers in this party who could do that. And I think that the campaign was run by people who think that you didn't need to do that and that you were going to get people out by ground game and you were going to get people out with your good vibes and your celebrity endorsements. Mm-hmm. And actually, people just want to feel connected to the person who's more influential to them. And it is the podcaster and it is the influencer. And it's not, doesn't have to be Joe Rogan. It can be smaller. Like they can be, you know, there's a reason that brands pay micro influencers as a whole strategy sometimes. And I just think that like they need to have more issue fluent messengers. And it doesn't have to be like, we are committing to XYZ. They just need to be able to go out there and speak out a progressive, forget right or left. I think we need to stop talking about right or left. I think we need to start speaking about things coded blue, red, Republican, Democrat. It needs to be about the people and how all this corruption is the problem that has led their lives to be to all these, you know, to towns that are completely like divested from, and why people are living on dirt floors and don't have a safety net. That is because of the corruption of wealthy billionaire elites whose whole entire business model is built on doing that. And that is very different than the capitalism and the American dream that we had been talking about, where you run a real business and you make real profits. Not, you know, a real business is not capturing the government to then have the laws change so that it becomes more lucrative for them to pay $100 million to a lobbyist because they're going to actually save $2 million on their taxes. Right. That is the problem with what is going on here. And the Democrats do not have anyone, besides maybe Bernie Sanders, who can articulate these problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, because Nancy is the number one stuck girly. She's on Unusual Whales all the time. But I'm going to tell you what. I think we should start taking that George Soros money I was alleged to have been taking all this time. Because those
Soros money. It didn't work.
Listen, those fucks were taking Peter Thiel money and he wasn't putting any strings on it, right? He was like, just run a podcast. Just take their attention. Just keep them company. Just fill them full of these talking points and we'll keep the money coming. Don't worry, Tim Pool. Don't worry this one. Don't worry that one. Didn't matter if there was substance or if it was true. It was about keeping them company and getting them hooked. We got to start billionaire money to keep people hooked.
Here's the thing. This is not going to work because it can't be like our billionaires are fairer or not manipulating you the way their billionaires are. We need to win with a message and messengers. And like, it's not impossible unless you believe that evil will prevail, like in all circumstances. We can win. You don't need to take I don't think that building
a new
party. No, we
absolutely do
need
people to invest in new media.
Sure. Okay. Billionaires, please give us some money. But I do not think that if it becomes just another fight backed by billionaires, we are going to end up in the same place. That's why we're here, because
Sammy,
the people
I'm
running the
you.
Party.
I'm with you. I'm saying when on TikTok, the men were like, you know what? We gave the ladies a chance to talk. We need to create our own Joe Rogan and our own Tucker Carlson. No, we don't, babe.
We tried.
We had that before and we still have it. It's called Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and all these other people. We do not need more men with microphones to try and debate or do like all this kind of bro stuff. What we need is people to invest in actual new media that educates, informs, and includes people. Support our show. Support the girl in the gov.
Yeah.
Literally.
Let the money flow.
I think like we can all speak from experience of like the last number of years of, you know, trying to make a go of these things. And it is a really, really tough investor, you know, landscape for left media and blue media across the board, quite honestly.
Because we're not going to make them any return.
Yeah. But I also think, too, in the like conversations we had, they want a very distinct metric of, well, how many people are you going to get registered to vote? And that's the only metric they can think in. They do not think in influence at all. Because I could say from having a marketing, PR, and influencer background prior to this, like that was one of the biggest issues that we would have with clients is they would want, okay, well, how many impressions did that make? How many like dollars did we get back on the backlinks? Like very specific metrics. And if it wasn't that, it didn't matter to them, despite like then their name being out there and that information being out there and it having a long game impact. And I think on the left, we don't have a long game strategy. And the investment shows that. It's like, and even too, as I go on this tirade, with the influencer strategy that was in place this year by the campaign, I mean, the DNC thing was so last minute. I mean, I didn't even bother to apply. It was like, I've got plans. I'm going to be on a bachelorette. Like y'all are like so behind the game on this.
When we look at influence, to your point, Taylor Swift endorsing the campaign we thought was such a big thing. And it obviously resulted in a lot of voter registrations and whatnot. But a Taylor Swift ticket is still kind of catering to people who've got $400 to $700 for the cheap seats. You know what I mean? We had those people. When you look at the sort of like other side of music and culture and whatnot, that's a $20 ticket and a tailgate. That's a NASCAR race. You know what I mean? Like they're more accessible spaces. Should the Democrats next time not worry about getting an MLB player to endorse them and get a Savannah Banana to endorse them, right? Like where yeah. are we at with oh my God, the yes. new media, with these new influencers, with like creating spaces that are affordable, that are for families, where they see us, you know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and we are there because we are those people. We just thought, you know, if we could top down it, which is always the thing with, you know, with everybody, right, is, oh, we're going to top down it. And it's like, no, you got to bottom up it. Like we yeah. could have had, you know, so much more of this. Like when I went to the North Carolina County Fair, there was a ton of Republican stuff and there was a Trump merch booth set up. Why weren't we there? You know, I mean, we could have been there. You got to meet people at the $13 to $20 ticket that we can afford and not the $700, you know, Beyonce.
Such a good point.
Ticket.
Well, there's yeah. a reason that it got painted as the party of elites because yeah. it is all these college educated voters. And to your point about, you know, how they were looking at metrics and voter registration, that's what happens when the whole game is run by people who came from McKinsey,
right.
like not people who actually like live on the internet, digital creatures. And I actually think the best thing the Harris campaign did was the Kamala HQ account, but that's not yes. the candidate.
Right.
That's very different. And that's also very different than having official celebrities at the events versus just celebrities talking about it to their own audiences. And again, it was this top-down approach that just is very, very 90s press junket.
I didn't need Kerry Washington all four nights of the DNC. I needed them to not cut the Tennessee Three from being able to speak. I didn't yeah. need, you know, Pink to do a whole entire performance, which was fun and I enjoyed it.
Oh.
I needed Rua Roman, who was the Palestinian woman elected to the Georgia state level congresswoman, to get her 1 minute to tell her speech, which was like, I as a Muslim and Palestinian woman am voting for Kamala Harris and here's why. And I need the rest of the internet to stop using my community as a means to try and put her down. That's what we needed. And I think,
yeah.
you know, you want to blame Jamie or whoever else. There was a couple of things that I hope next time we get right, because I want the Tennessee Three would have had more impact than Kerry Washington ever could have. Rua Roman could have had more impact than anybody who was trying to say, you know, she becomes the mascot for like the truth and speaking for this population that isn't just, you know, Rashida Tlaib or Dearborn in Michigan or whoever. There was mm-hmm. there was an alternate there. And I think those are some of the misses that we can write down and we can say, hey, we really learned a hard lesson from that.
The rich celebrities and the Goldman Sachs economists, all of these things
the
was a
Cheney.
Failure to was a failure to misread that what people wanted was someone who they felt emotionally was going to fight for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, no. I think we learned a lot. And that's something that I love about us is like we do learn and we talk and we get angry and we have a little snack and then we talk again and we talk again. But I do think that if the older establishment won't pass the baton of power, then it's on us to take it. And I do yeah. think that there are a lot of things that I was willing to be, you know, guided on when it came to how this was going to work that I wouldn't be in the future. And then I hope that we are taking a stronger stand in the future to say like, no, we're not going to spend this much time trying to get the Taylor Swift endorsement, right? Like it's right. going to be what it is.
She, yeah, I mean,
I think it's going to be, I honestly, like, so I always am a hopeful movie. Person. That's part of my allure, right? And I found so much good in this election with the fact that, yeah, it went for Trump or whatever, but seven states now have protections for abortion, including Missouri. Angela Alsobrooks beat Republican darling Larry Hogan. Like, there's a lot to be proud of what we did. And it's like, it's never quite over. It's like, there's a lot to be proud of. We're going to watch the tapes and we're going to learn better. And just like the Buffalo Bills, I'm going to always believe that we're going to win the Super Bowl and we're going to try again.
Yeah. We got to go back and we got to go in the film.
We're going to go back and we got to go in the film. Yep. And yep. I'll tell you what, I'm going to put all my Bills shit away. I'm going to put my Harris Wall stuff away and I'm going to take that shit right out when it comes for the midterms. I'm going to have that same kind of enthusiasm because that is what makes this country great.
I was wondering
and I do
what
believe
to do
in
with
the American promise.
I'll just store it.
I'm keeping
it. Oh, it's
going
to be so great in 30 years when it's like Bush Gore merch.
Okay,
like,
so I bought a pair of white Chucks 5 months ago, the day that she became the candidate, and I wore them to every single thing that I did, and they are worn. And to me, when I look at those white Chucks, I'm like, I will remember all the friends I made, all the things I learned, how hard I worked, how enthusiastic we were, what it felt like to be a part of that world.
The rights I lost.
The rights I lost. And I'm putting them together with things that like are for me, right? There's like what we're going to do to try and better America, which is always going to happen. America has had worse times. They will have worse times in the future and they will have good times. And we're not giving up. But I want to be able to look at that stuff and be able to tell the story of like, so not you don't just because you don't win doesn't mean it didn't matter. And I want, you know, my niece and stuff to be like, oh, my God, those were your shoes from the campaign when you did this incredible thing, even though you didn't win. It was still really incredible.
Cute.
Yeah. You got to have those moments. I'm not embarrassed of anything I did. And there's not one more thing I could have done. It's like, you know, when like my grandma died, I was sad, but I was like, I couldn't have loved her anymore. I called her every single day at 5 p.m. There's not one more story I could have asked her about. There's not one more thing I could have gotten from her. And when she passed, I was sad, but I also took all of that and I was and I just lived in all the happy memories and the things I learned from her. And I wish she could be here. I wish Kamala Harris was president, but she's not. But that doesn't mean that everything we did together wasn't worth it.
For sure.
1,000%.
I think to like closing note, it also it's like looking at the analysis, like we need to be also looking at like what we did do well, because we did have some wins, right?
There was a lot of wins.
Yeah. Like we flipped the Kentucky State Supreme Court. Like
I taught JoJo Siwa's ex-girlfriend about abortion policy and she was very effective.
Avery Cyrus ladder of engagement is the biggest win of this year.
She was incredible. Her and Cole Perez also, like these kids who would have never, you would have never thought somebody like that would be interested in politics, learned, was enthusiastic, and will be a future leader that is going to continue to spread that message and is going to continue to give people hope. Because at the end of this, I had a bunch of kids in my DMs telling me that they don't want to be on this planet anymore. And I was like, you don't get to decide that. You're staying. I'm staying. This isn't the end. We're going to continue to fight. Look at all these people that we met that are in your world right now. You got to stick around and see how it's going to turn out. We're not going to give up. And I think Avery Cyrus is such a great example of some of the things that we did well, because you took somebody who went from, honestly, did not have to get excited or interested about this, had a perfectly fine life before this, actually took a lot of hits for getting involved in this. Yep. And came so far and helped so many people.
And that is the work we need to continue to build on and do better at. It's like, we don't necessarily have to create the next Joe Rogan, but who is on that trajectory? Who can we tap into this movement and who can we get on our side that's like already built a platform, already there? Like, how can we be strategic in those ways? And we don't have to duplicate their stuff, but we can create, be strategic and find what works for us in this coalition we want to build. But
Look at Anderson Clayton. It doesn't even have to be a celebrity or an influencer. Anderson Clayton, 26 years old, the Democratic chair of North Carolina. That girl, what an incredible like thing to be building off of. Mm-hmm. People like Anderson Clayton, we're going to find more of her in more states, and that's going to be a thing. We've got possibility models where we never had them before, and that is interesting and exciting.
Yeah, and we just like from the first Trump win and the first Trump term, like we created something amazing, and so many amazing things were created from that, and that's just only gonna go up from here in this moment, which is exciting, an exciting piece of what's next. But we will let you guys go. V, ever since you said Home Goods, I was like, oh my god, I need to go to Home Goods. That sounds
go to Home
like
Goods.
The best thing
put on our show
right now.
I will admit I went shopping yesterday and it helped.
I put up all my Christmas decorations all
that, I yes I think I need to do that.
You gotta find the joy. You know what? Joe Biden's president. Joe Biden's president until January 19th, January 20th at noon. Right. Live it up. It's okay. It's okay to laugh. It's okay to cry. We saw the pictures of Kamala Harris playing checkers or Connect Four with her grandnieces. Like, it's okay. And you know, Trump standing in front of a machine that he doesn't understand, even if he pushes every single button and fucks it up, he could not do nearly the amount of damage that he would do if he knew how to work that machine. And I believe that there are helpers all along the way who are going to try to jam up his gears as much as possible, folks that we don't know or see, but that will – you have to believe that people are inherently good and they're going to eventually come to the right decision. And so that's where I'm at.
I would advise living every day. One at a time, because
short term decisions. Just what's the next thing I'm going to do? That's all you got to do.
Like, was it Nora Ephron or maybe I think it was Nora Ephron who would use the fancy silverware every day.
Yeah.
And someone would say that was very strange. And she said, all there is every day.
Right. Yeah.
So that's how we got to live.
Yep.
And you know, just because there are horrors going on does not mean that you cannot experience really beautiful moments. And
Yeah. And in order to endure, like, we have to find the joy and the peace and the exciting pieces of our lives and find community, be in IRL with people, like, try and do your best
in
person community, because that's going to what's going to energize us for this fight ahead.
Well, thanks for having us on, gals. Oh,
thanks for coming. Thanks for
ranting
with us.
On that note about being in community, please check out my book, Democracy in Retrograde, How to Make Changes Big and Small in Our Country and Our Lives, because it is really all about that. We wrote this before the election, if you're a fan of Emily.
Yeah, are you psychic? Are you clairvoyant? What's going on?
Like, honestly, like, I'm not going to claim it on TikTok, but I do have, like, a Reiki healer has told me that
I'm very intuitive.
Mm-hmm. And we wrote this this book is nonpartisan. It is, and I don't say that, it's not for the 2024 election. It is for a lifelong personal paradigm shift about how engaging your community is self-care. And that is how we move things forward. So check out Democracy in Retrograde and American Fever Dream and the Morning Announcements.
Heck yeah. Thank you both.
Bye.
Thank you.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.